Welcome to this special edition of the Ophthalmology Times iPod, recorded in conjunction with PER. This podcast examines how key therapies for treating diabetic macular edema, anti-VEGF agents, and corticosteroids, address the underlying pathophysiology of the condition to effectively and safely treat it. In this podcast, three ophthalmologists, Dr. Peter Kaiser, Dr. Fernando Arevalo, and Dr. Nathan Steinle, share their insights to help you optimize care for your patients with this common diabetes-related eye disease.
What I tell my patients with diabetic macular edema is this is a long-term treatment. I want to set the expectations from the start very clear. At the beginning, the treatment is going to be very intensive. With anti-VEGF therapy, probably the patient will need, if they respond well, about 9 to 10 injections the first year. But then the injections will be reduced to maybe 5 or 6 the second year, maybe 4 or 3 injections the third year, a couple of injections in year 4. And in year 5, they may not need any more injections. So even though this is a long-term treatment and very intensive at the beginning, I tell my patients that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And I tell them also that my goal is to improve vision and decrease central macular thickness. I follow the RCRNet guidelines, and I'd like to see at least 5 letters of visual acuity improvement and 20% of reduction of central field of thickness in the central macula. And if I get that, then I call that a responder. If I don't get it, then it may need maybe a non-responder that may need something else to be to treat this diabetic macular edema.
Thank you, Dr. Arevalo. Dr. Kaiser, we know that anti-VEGF agents and corticosteroids are standard therapies used to manage DME. How established and robust are the data supporting use of anti-VEGF therapies for treating DME, and what are the treatment limitations?
So the gold standard treatment for diabetic macular edema has been established in multiple pivotal phase 3 clinical studies with anti-VEGF agents. And in these studies, they went up against the previous gold standard, which was focal laser treatment. And in those studies, the use of anti-VEGF injections improved visual acuity more so than what we saw with laser treatment. So because of that, we use anti-VEGF as the gold standard. Now, not all patients will respond to anti-VEGF injections. There are patients who we call non-responders. And in these patients, despite anti-VEGF agents, we may consider other agents. In addition, even between the different anti-VEGF agents, we actually have clinical studies from the DRCR, for instance, that have compared the outcomes amongst the 3 major anti-VEGF injections that were at the time of that study: bevacizumab, aflibercept, and ranibizumab. And based on the baseline characteristics of the patient's macular edema, their visual acuity, and a retinal thickness, one may consider one anti-VEGF agent over another. So there are many factors that come into play, but if we look at the data supporting the use of anti-VEGF in DME, there's excellent level 1 evidence to support its use.
Dr. Arevalo, what do you consider for a patient with DME who does not respond as expected to anti-VEGF therapy?
When I get a patient that is a non-responder with anti-VEGF therapy, then I turn to corticosteroids. What I turn to is intravitreal dexamethasone. That's my preferred corticosteroid selection. It's something that I start after 3 or 6 injections, depending on the response to anti-VEGF, and then keep the patient on injections every 3 to 4 months. For several injections, and patients may respond well to that or may need supplementary injections with anti-VEGF. We have to remember that diabetic macular edema is multifactorial. It may be VEGF driven. Those are the ones that will respond to anti-VEGF very well. But it may be inflammatory driven, and those will respond to corticosteroids better. But it may also be combined, both anti-VEGF or VEGF driven and inflammatory cytokines driven macular edema, and those will need probably a combination therapy.
Thank you, Dr. Arevalo. Dr. Steinle, how effective are intravitreal steroids for DME, and what kind of visual acuity outcomes have been observed in those clinical trials?
The answers are incredibly effective. I think that we all wish we'd probably reach for more quickly than we do. I think most of us here in the United States, we reach for anti-VEGF agents first for diabetic macular edema. And after one or two or three injections, if we're just not getting the response we want or the duration of response we want, we then will reach for a corticosteroid. And almost to a person, I'm always really impressed by how well these corticosteroids work. They work best in patients that are already pseudophakic, but they also work well in patients that are phakic. And what we really see in those patients who have diffuse edema across the entire macula, sometimes we call it almost an inflammatory DME or inflammatory diabetic macular edema picture, where they really have a lot of vascular leakage and diffuse spongy edema across the entire macula. It's about the only thing that can work in these patients are these long-term steroid injections for patients.
Thank you, Dr. Steinle. Some experts feel that often clinicians wait too long to switch to corticosteroids. What do you think are the reasons for this?
Even in my own clinics, I fault myself for this. Why am I not reaching for my corticosteroids more quickly in the treatment of my diabetic macular edema patients, especially those who aren't responding well or suboptimally to their anti-VEGF injections? And the answer really comes down to the fact that, you know, first off, I think most of us think is the anti-VEGF is pretty darn safe. And so then when you reach over for corticosteroids, there's the two main side effects that are, you know, well documented. Number one is cataract formation and cataract progression. And then number two is a small percentage of patients can get intraocular pressure rises. And both those are controllable factors. So if a person does get a cataract, then of course, the cataract surgery is a pretty common procedure now in America. And then as far as the pressure rises, it's pretty rare that you'll get to the point where you'll need some type of incisional surgery for these patients. Sometimes you will have to start a short-term drop or even a long-term drop on these patients or consider SLT laser in these patients with IOP rises with corticosteroids. But it's pretty rare that you'll have to move on to actually incisional glaucoma procedures for these patients. But the answer for why we are sometimes not reaching more quickly to corticosteroids comes a little bit down to the side effect profile of corticosteroids, and also just comes down to our own kind of busy clinics. You know, my busy clinic, it's sometimes easier to do what I did last time than to think about a new treatment algorithm and perhaps get a benefits investigation and move the patient to a different treatment. But I'm really kind of doing my patients a disservice, and I try and obviously give every patient the best possible service. And so I know from protocol I, from the DRCRNet, that after three injections of anti-VEGF, if patients weren't responding well or were suboptimal responders, no matter how many injections you gave them anti-VEGF, they'd really kind of stay in their swim lane. And so those patients who are early non-responders or suboptimal responders in anti-VEGF have been really trying to be more conscientious about moving to corticosteroids, especially after three anti-VEGF injections, if I'm not seeing the response I want.
Thank you. Dr. Kaiser, how should the differential effects of various corticosteroids be factored into selection of therapy for DME?
So when you talk about corticosteroids, especially when we're using it for the treatment of diabetic macular edema, it's important to understand that all steroids are definitely not created equal. Some are very potent very quickly, but they don't last very long. Others have a lower potency, but because they're insoluble, will last for a very long time. And the goal of our treatment then is to balance these effects for the patient that we have in front of us. Now, if you were to, say, inject a patient with dexamethasone, which you certainly could do, that's not going to last a very long time, but it's going to be a very powerful steroid effect. And because of that, dexamethasone has been put into sustained release implants to allow us to get that effect over a long period of time. Contrast that with, say, the injection of triamcinolone acetonide. Now, that's a very insoluble steroid. It's going to last a very long time. But the potency of triamcinolone, say, compared to dexamethasone, is not the same. So when you say you're going to use a steroid for diabetic macular edema, you really need to understand what's your goal with that treatment, both in the short term and the long term, because steroids are not created equal.
With several intravitreal corticosteroids available, what are your tips to clinicians for how to select among them?
I would like to start when anti-VEGF does not work with a dexamethasone implant because it's more potent and the duration is shorter. So I can see a good response, but if there is any complications that we know that can occur with steroids, it will be also short-term. Steroids can be associated with increase in intraocular pressure. In phakic patients, they may develop a cataract. So a short-term steroid will be associated with less complications, and I can assess if the patient it will respond to that corticosteroid. Usually, depending on the patient, may use several injections. Some patients are different and may tolerate more injections even every 3 to 4 months, but some others want something longer acting than the dexamethasone implant. And then I would turn to the fluocinolone implant. And the fluocinolone implant can potentially last up to 3 years. And that can be used in patients that need multiple dexamethasone implant injections and have no intraocular pressure issues.
Dr. Steinle, what safety and tolerability concerns should clinicians be aware of for anti-VEGF agents and corticosteroids?
First, we'll talk about the safety profile of anti-VEGF agents. And this really came about in 2004 and 2005 when we started using broadstream, you know, these VEGF-A inhibitors. And we've been doing that now for almost 20 years in ophthalmology. And so we have a pretty good feel for how these agents work. And, you know, the real side effect profile with these are mostly related to the injection itself, a small risk of endophthalmitis in the order of 1 in 2 or 3,000 injections against an endophthalmitis. We worry about a PVD creation or a posterior vitreal detachment creation in these patients, especially in younger diabetic patients who have formed vitreous. And just that current of fluid of the injection can create a PVD. So you watch for, you know, retinal tears and perhaps even retinal attachments. Those are rare. We watch for cataract formation. If you're not careful with your needle technique and making sure you're really aiming posteriorly. And then finally, there's this, you know, theoretical risk of these arterial thrombolic events or ATEs. And that's, you know, been in the literature for a long time that these are at-risk patients that are diabetic patients who already have baseline vasculopathy. And so you always want to talk to them about, you know, if they've had a recent stroke or heart attack and maybe thinking, maybe not reaching for an anti-VEGF for a little while, but perhaps switching over to a corticosteroid, at least in the short term, if not in the long term, because there's not that risk of the arterial thrombolic events. And then next, I'll talk about the safety profile of corticosteroids. And corticosteroids have also been using for about 20 years now, very regularly in ophthalmology, starting with triamcinolone, then moving over to dexamethasone, and then moving over to fluocinolone. And so we have a very good feel for how these agents work in the eye. And the main profile that we worry about here from a side effects profile is just, you know, cataract and also IOP elevations. And in general, we think about a third of the population can be steroid responders. But I think it's important to note that just because you have a steroid responder, it does not mean you have glaucoma changes. And so you can have increased intraocular pressure, but have a normal nerve and have no visual functional loss. And so, yes, I don't love to have my patients have high pressure, but I always have to remind myself that I'm really following them for changes to the optic nerve and actual visual function loss rather than just high IOP. And as far as the cataract progression goes, I don't love it in patients that are under the age of 45 or so, because those patients, of course, can still accommodate. But after the age of 45, if a person has cataract or at risk for cataract progression, I'm less concerned for that because I have wonderful cataract colleagues here and anterior segment colleagues that can certainly help patients out. And sometimes it's almost a benefit to them because we can now have such great pseudophakic treatment algorithms that can offer patients as far as different types of multifocal lenses and different type of postoperative, you know, pop monovision or toric visions afterwards to try and minimize any refractive error. So we really have gotten really great with our refractive options for our patients, even if they might be, you know, say 55 or so years old. And then finally, you know, we mentioned for any type of intravitreal injection, we worry about that small risk endophthalmitis with steroids as well. And then finally, PVD creation, just because you're putting some type of object in the eye, and that of course could elicit a release of the posterior hyoid. So you have to watch for any types of horseshoe tears or any types of peripheral detachments.